Welcome to this podcast by The Rocks Church. We hope you find it challenging and inspiring. For more information, visit therocks.church.
My name's Alistair, if you haven't met me. I'm normally down in our Baldivis location, but great joy and privilege for me to be up here with you guys today in Cannington. For any of you that are new to The Rocks, we're one church in two locations. We have our location here in Cannington and another location in Baldivis, but we are still one house, and I just love that we kind of get to trade speakers and kind of get to know each other. I just want to clarify for anyone in the room today, we sing those songs not because they're musically brilliant. We sing those songs because we believe them. And there are people in the room today that have been following Jesus and their lives have been truly transformed. And in what we're trying to do today and what I'm hoping to do today is inspire you just a little bit more to follow Jesus. I met Jesus when I was 17 years old. I grew up in a family that was semi-religious. My parents are South African, and so there was a religious tendency within my family to admit that there was a God that existed. But when I was 17, I experienced God in a way that I can never fully explain or comprehend, and it changed the direction completely of my life. My wife grew up in a non-Christian home, had no association. Both her parents are actually atheists. And so our lives have been transformed by the presence of Jesus in normal, everyday human beings that change the course of our lives. And we don't want any illusions today that that's our hope and our dream for this city, that we would see the city of Perth transformed in a similar way, that trajectories of lives would shift. And for some of us in the room today, today could be the first day of the rest of your life. And so I just encourage you to lean in. I really believe in what I've got for you. And I just encourage you to lean in with me. I don't know if you have ever noticed this, but maybe it's something only I do. But have you ever noticed that sometimes you will operate differently depending on the environment that you're in? Depending on who you're around, depending on what you're engaging with, you might be slightly different in your characteristics or in your mannerisms. We actually have a term for this in the world of psychology. We call it multiple personality disorder. I'm kidding. I'm not a psychiatrist. We actually have multiple personalities that actually can be ordered. I don't know if you're aware of this, but many of us will operate differently depending on the context that we're in. In fact, you probably have done it this week. Maybe you were in a meeting with your boss. You've made a mistake. You're going to operate differently in that meeting than you will when you're consoling your three-year-old because they broke a toy. It is logical and helpful to change the way that we are operating in both of those contexts. The problem is, if we're not 100% sure of who we are or what we believe, when we're in those different environments, we can accidentally actually become different people. And it's no longer a personality shift that happens, actually. It's an entire personhood that shifts. And that concept is kind of where I want to land today and kind of what I want to talk about. Because you'll notice this in some of the people that you know in your life. You'll observe them when they're around you and they'll operate and believe and talk in a certain way. And then you'll see them with a different set of people and you'll go, it's almost as if they have a totally different set of values. It's not just that they are acting differently or their mannerisms have changed. It's like, wait, you told me that you don't believe in slavery, but now you're buying stuff on Temu. I don't understand. What is this concept, right? Where is it coming from? I think it's coming from peer pressure. All of us have dealt with peer pressure. Many of us believe it finishes at the end of high school, but really, it carries on. I was 21. I was studying my Bachelor of Education. I was originally a high school teacher. And I'm studying outdoor rec, and I met a few of the boys, and we were all into mountain biking, and I thought, hey, guys, let's go do the Mundabiddy. So we did 4 days on the Mundabiddy, and I'm literally like 20 years old, right? I'm like a grown adult male, and I get to the top of this hill with like all my stuff on my bike, and I'm like, I don't know about this. This is a pretty big hill. And one of these guys, I've known him for a week, he looks me in the eye, and he says, old Alistair would have done it. You don't even know old Alistair. I've known you for a week. And you know what? I did it. Because I'm like, old Alistair probably would have done it, right? Peer pressure doesn't go away. In fact, it's worse now, I think, than it has ever been. I don't know if you've had this experience. Maybe it's been a rough day. You're up late at night. You've got the connoisseur, cookies and cream, ice cream. You got the spoon. You're just eating it straight out of the bucket. You don't care. You open up Instagram and someone your age is posting gym selfies. And you're thinking, oh no. So you put the tub back in the freezer. You pretend it never happened, right? What are we doing, guys? We are comparing our average to someone else's best. The problem of social media is that it puts peer pressure in our pocket. And worse than that, it's literally designed as an algorithm to meet your exact mode of life you're in right now. You interact with content that is for your phase of life, and it gives you more content like that. And so let's say you're a young parent, struggling, baby doesn't sleep. Guess what you're going to see on your feed? A lot of other young parents living their best life. Look, we took our kids to Disneyland and it was amazing. And you're sitting there like, I just want 45 minutes where it will sleep, right? Or maybe you're like a young adult, you're trying to work out where your kind of career is going, and all you're doing is seeing young professionals crushing it everywhere. And you're like, man, I'm 21 and I haven't become a director of a company yet. My life's a failure, right? This is the problem, is that we are interacting with this world that's not real. And it's terrifying because it's actually coming from a place in here that's a deep desire to be included. We want to belong to something. We want to be part of something. And the irony is that we actually already do belong because everyone's in the same boat. Everyone's seeing the same feed, seeing how their life is not good enough and it doesn't match up. And so our desire to be included is actually a really strong wish within here. If we were to literally translate desire, it means to strongly wish for. And I think that there are people in the room today that have a strong desire to belong and to be included. And I don't think that's limited to this room. I think it's out on that street. It's in the shopping center across the road. It's in the entire city of Cannington. I think our entire population of humanity is crying out to belong, to feel included. Now, why is this a problem? Because our desire to be included can change the way that we operate depending on who we're around. And this is the core of the problem, because we code switch depending on who we're around. We're around the footy boys, we operate a certain way. We're around the church guys, we operate a certain way. We're around the work guys, we operate a different way again. And why that's a problem is because code switching can only ever be temporary. And the more that we change the way that we operate, actually the less vulnerable we can be. The more people are skeptical of what we're really like, and the less we have trusting and stable relationships. In fact, I would go even further than that. I would say that stability cannot have a foundation in the temporary. This is why we say we're going to build our homes on a stable foundation, right? No one is building a house without a slab, because you need to have a firm foundation that it's built on. But if you don't know who you are, and you change who you are depending on who you're around, you'll never have stable relationships because you're constantly on edge. Are they going to find out who I really am? Are they going to find out what I'm really like? What if they find out I go to church on Sundays? That's going to wreck everything, right? Maybe this is for you. But worse than that, I think, is that temporary can accidentally become permanent. I don't know if anyone's a homeowner in the house. I'm a homeowner on a very limited budget. And so we had the lighting replaced in our house a couple of years ago when we first moved in. And the electrician removed the old lights and left a couple of large holes in the ceiling. And we didn't like that. So I went to Bunnings and I said, I need a ceiling patch repair kit. And the lady gave me everything I needed. She said, you stick this on, you put the putty on, and you're going to let it dry. Then you're going to sand it and paint it. And I thought, great, no worries. So I got home. I stuck my patch on the ceiling across all the holes. I got my putty. And I put my putty on the ceiling. Great. On the tin, leave for 24 hours, no worries. I can safely say it has been 2.5 years and that putty is well and truly dried. I have not yet sanded it or painted it, but it is definitely dry. I don't know if this is the same for you, but temporary, accidentally, can become permanent. And it's true in the physical world, but it's actually more true in the relational world. Some of us actually would put narratives around this for ourselves. We might say things like, I know he isn't good for me, but it's not forever. It's just like a placeholder. This guy's just like around for a bit. And then you've been together for 6 months, and you've been together for 2 years, and now you're engaged, now you're married, now you have a family, and you're still going, this was only ever meant to be temporary. I hope that's not the case. Maybe for you it's different, right? I know that she brings out the worst in me, but I'll move on soon. And it's the same thing. You find yourself in 5 years or 10 years going, this was only ever meant to be temporary, and yet now I find myself in a place of permanency. Maybe for you it's not in a relational context. Maybe it's more in a friendship context. It might be something like this. I don't love what we do when we hang out, but I'm just really stressed right now. And so I just need to be with these people. I don't love the things I do when I'm around them. I don't love the person I become when I'm around them. But my life's just really stressed right now. And it was a hard day, and then it was a hard week, and then it was a hard month, and then it was a hard year. And suddenly you find yourself doing things that you never actually wanted to do because of this deep desire to be included and to belong. And something that was meant to be temporary accidentally became permanent. Now, why is this important? Because you and I are the products of our closest friends. If we look at the 3 to 5 people that hold the most influence over our lives, that's who we're most heavily influenced by. And I actually go one step further than that again, and I would actually say that if you show me your closest friends, I will show you who you will be in 5 years' time. And for some of us in the room, we know that the people that are holding the primary influence over our lives are not helping us become the best version of who we want to be or who we could be. Now, why am I talking to you about all of this at the front end of a talk? It feels like a very long introduction, and I think it needed to be. Because just recently, I've been reading through the book of Mark. Now, for anyone that is new to church, the book of Mark is a biography of Jesus, written by a guy called Mark. The Bible was very logical. Anyway, Mark, for anyone that is new to following Jesus, if you have not read the life of Jesus, I would encourage you to start with Mark. Mark actually wrote his biography of Jesus towards people who had no kind of backstory of the religion that Jesus was originally part of, which was ancient Judaism. And so the gospel of Mark, the good news of Mark, is written in a way that anyone that doesn't have any kind of presuppositions about what religion should look like can engage with really, really healthily. And so I love the book of Mark. It's super fast-paced. I'm a more fast-paced kind of person, so it's my kind of personality. But Mark is fantastic. But if you are, again, new to faith, the Bible itself is not actually originally written in English. You kind of got two testaments. You have an Old Testament, which is written in Hebrew, and a New Testament, which is written in Greek. And so what you and I are actually interacting with is translations. Now, I speak a very small amount of Japanese. Okay, I cannot translate for someone from Japanese to English or English to Japanese. I do not have that kind of skill set. And so we need to rely on other people to translate ancient Greek to us in a way that's helpful and valuable. And so I would always recommend to read the NIV or the NLT. It's based on the most reliable manuscripts, and it's written in a way that's easy for us to kind of interact with and understand. Not at all to do with my talk, but I think helpful. We're going to be reading from Mark chapter 2. It's right in the very beginning. And it's when Jesus is kind of around this area of Capernaum. Capernaum was like around this area of Galilee. You can still go there today. And this is where most of his first half of his ministry was based. But we're going to read from verse 13 in chapter 2. It says, once again, Jesus went out beside the lake. A large crowd came to him, and he began to teach them. As he walked along, he saw Levi, son of Alphaeus, sitting at the tax collector's booth. Follow me, Jesus told him, and Levi got up and followed him. While Jesus was having dinner at Levi's house, many tax collectors and sinners were eating with him and his disciples, for there were many who followed him. And this story seems so short, maybe a little bit like, okay, it seems not that big of a deal, but I've got to tell you, this has been blowing my heart up for the last month. And it seems like such a short little tidbit in this kind of life of Jesus. And maybe we can get like distracted with this amazing call. Oh, Levi, he just like responds instantly and it's amazing. But that's not what's blowing my mind about this story. We've got to have a bit of backstory here. And we need to understand that Jesus' disciples were fishermen. And that's really important because where do fishermen fish? It's not a trick question. It's the water. Okay, so they're fishing in the water. And Jesus has called his disciples here at the Sea of Galilee in Capernaum to follow him. And his disciples were fishermen that fished in the lake that Jesus is walking around. Now, why is that important? Because another simple question for you, who likes the tax man? Nobody. It's just no perfect people, unless you work for the ATO, in which case we love you. We're so grateful that you are looking after our finance, and we love paying 37% on the dollar. It's our greatest gift. Unless you're like a tax accountant, in which case you know how to do some doctoring and you don't pay any tax at all. But we don't need to go backwards in time to understand that there is a tension whenever it comes to authority and tax. And so you have Levi, the tax collector, sitting by the sea. And you can now probably put two and two together that the guy that was taxing the fisherman was more than likely Levi. And what I find interesting about this story is the bigger context of what a tax collector is in this time. Because a tax collector in the time of Jesus is someone who is ostracized and removed from their cultural heritage. They're actually kind of removed from Jewish society because of something that's happened in their life, some kind of financial pressure, some kind of mistake, some kind of error in their judgment that has left them in a place where they're essentially financially destitute. And so essentially what they do is they sacrifice their existing relationship with their own cultural people in order to work for the Roman authority, which was occupying the Jewish region at the time. And they, on behalf of the Roman Empire, tax their very own people. Now, it would be bad enough if that was the case, but it's actually worse than that, because not only do they tax their own people, they take a little bit off the top. And they tax them more than what they actually should so that they can have a nicer lifestyle. And so if you walk with me for a minute, we have Jesus' disciples who were established fishermen who had spent their entire lives honing a craft of fishing. And every single day, they would get back to port and they would walk off of their boat. And more than likely, Levi was waiting for them as a daily reminder of someone who abandoned his people for their own financial gain. Every single day, they would have to interact with this guy who was taking more than he deserved so he could have a more comfortable life. Every single day, they have to be greeted with this face that smiles and says, "Thank you for your money. I'm now going to go back to my mansion and my palace." And every single day, you are targeted and taken advantage of by one of your very own people. But what blows my mind about this story is that when Jesus interacts with Levi, he says, "Come and follow me." And the next line is not, "And then the disciples took turns beating the crap." No, they didn't do that. What did they do? They went to dinner at his house. Can we take a moment to accept how ridiculous this is? The disciples willingly included the very person who used to target them. And more than that, their association with Jesus allowed them to relax in his home. I don't know what you're kind of walking in with today, but there is more than likely people that have hurt you and damaged you. And this story might ring true for you. But there's something in this that is changing my perspective. Because if the mere association with Jesus allowed the disciples to relax in the presence of their enemies, there's got to be something significant about who Jesus is. Because what we've got to understand is that the disciples at this point in history did not have the Holy Spirit. So for those of us that are following Jesus, we are empowered and blessed with the presence of God in our daily lives as we're given the gift of the Holy Spirit, massive part of the Christian faith. But these guys don't yet have that gift. They're simply walking with Jesus, and just from being around him, they are able to forgive in a supernatural, incredible way. Now, why that is important, I think, is because our lives are different because we are walking with Jesus. This is the whole thing. If we're saying yes to this offer from the King of Heaven to be introduced to his story, to be introduced to the narrative that he's writing, we are saying yes to walking with him each and every day. And so what that means is that you and I are changed because of who we walk with. And if you're anything like me, you will know that who you walk with changes how you walk. If I go out with my wife, we're going to go out, we're going to hold hands, I have to slow my pace down a little bit. I'm a fast-paced kind of person, and my wife constantly is pulling me back and saying, hey, let's just slow down, we don't need to go that fast. It's even worse if I go with the three-year-old, you're like trying to hold his little hand, he's got his little legs, he can't walk fast enough. Who we walk with changes how we walk. And so I want to share with you five things that I found extremely helpful and very practical in what it looks like for our walks to change as we kind of follow Jesus. Now, if you are someone who is not following Jesus, maybe you got invited along today, you're here with someone, you're here with a friend, I think these five things will be helpful for you anyway. But if you are someone who is following Jesus, I think that they are more than that. I think that they are vital. The first thing that we're going to do is we're going to cultivate our feeds. And I mean here, our digital diet. It's called a diet because it's literally what we eat mentally, right? If you were to eat Hungry Jack's every meal for 7 days straight, 365 days a year, you would not be the picture of health. But we do this with our digital diets all the time. And for some of us in the room, maybe it's not social media. I understand that social media is kind of getting boycotted a little bit, especially in our younger generations, as they're realizing how toxic this thing is. But our digital feed is anything that we ingest in the form of media. This could be Disney, it could be Netflix, it could be Reddit articles, it could be the news. Any way that we are getting information from the outside world into our brains, we need to cultivate what it is that's coming in. And you know already for your own self what you need to cut out of whatever your feed is, right? Maybe it's little things like putting screen time limits on individual apps. Maybe that's going to help you. Maybe it's unfollowing certain people on Instagram or Facebook or TikTok or whatever the thing is. Maybe you're unsubscribing from some YouTube channels. But we've got to cultivate our feeds because our digital diet is changing our brain chemistry and it's changing our makeup and it's changing the way that we view the world. And if we're not intentional with what we're ingesting digitally, we'll end up in a place where we don't want to be. Secondly, we need to cultivate our friendships. Friendships take a lot of time, take a lot of energy, they take a lot of work. And sometimes we're going to cultivate friendships that are not healthy for us. And you already know that there are friends that you have that are not good for you and you are not good for them. And while I'm not suggesting that you abandon every friendship that you've got, I am suggesting that your friendships are extremely, extremely important. And if you're not being intentional with those friendships, you could find yourself in a place where you don't want to be. For my own self and my wife, we're really, really lucky. We've got a group of friends that we've been friends with since we were in our late teens, like 18, 19. And we've been able to live life together for the last 12 years. And that group of friends has changed the trajectory of our lives because they challenge us to be more like Jesus. None of them go to this church. We're all in different churches all across Perth. And we've done that intentionally so that we can have a place where we can be fully ourselves, be fully authentic. We don't have to worry about putting a facade up or anything like that. And I encourage you, if you don't have currently a group of friends where you can actually just relax and be yourself, that's the type of friendship that you need to cultivate because it will change your life. Thirdly, you've got to cultivate your influences. And this is influences into you as well as influences out of you. So, for example, like if we were to get really practical, let's say that you struggle with alcohol. Don't do boys' night for the next 2 or 3 months as you get that under control. That's an influence that is not healthy for you. If you struggle with pornography and lust, you need to confess that to friends that you can trust. You need to put limits on your phone. you need to do practical measures to stop that influence from derailing your life. If you are someone who struggles with body image, you need to stop following influencers on social media that have fake lives that are not real. You need to stop following people that Photoshop themselves to make them look different and better than they are in real life. Maybe you need to follow a page like Instagram Reality where they show how people Photoshop themselves so that you can be reminded none of it is actually real or helpful. Maybe for you, you are struggling with living an intentional life. And so the influences that you need to cultivate are the people that are helping you think about the bigger picture. That it's not just about this month or this year or this season, it's about who you're becoming. If you're someone who follows Jesus, maybe it's thinking about who am I directly influencing to become the best version of themselves. In fact, who am I discipling to make more like Jesus? And who is discipling me? These are intentional things that we can do that will change the person that we become. Fourthly, we want to cultivate our time. Everyone gets it, 86,400 seconds a day. You have to spend all of it. You can't save it up. You can't bank it. I'm going to put it out there. It's going to be very difficult for you to spend an hour a day praying if you spend 5 hours a day on TikTok. Because that time habit begets another time habit. It's going to be very difficult for you to spend an hour investing in your friends if you spend 5 hours a day playing Fortnite. Is that still a game that kids play? I don't know. I'm pretty out of the loop. Now I'm not a high school teacher. I don't know any of the cool stuff anymore. I'm going to have to like meet with teenagers to find out what's going on. Our time is our most precious resource, right? And I've got to... what I'm learning more and more, I'm only 30, right? But as I'm getting older, I'm realizing that my life really matters. And it doesn't matter just for me. It matters for the rest of the world. Because if I've only got a limited amount of time, I need to take as much advantage of the time I have available to become the best version of me that I can become, not just for myself, but because of whoever is looking at my life. I actually need to consecrate my life because what happens, right? Let's say I spend 5 hours a day watching TV instead of reading. And someone comes to me with a question. They say, hey, my grandma just died of cancer. How can you believe God exists? And I respond with, I just watched 4 seasons on Netflix of XYZ. I can't answer that. It's because I didn't cultivate my time. I spent it incorrectly. And so what that means for all of us is actually what we really want to hone in on is cultivating our devotion. Because all of us are devoting our lives to something. Sometimes it's a good thing, like family. Sometimes it's a great thing, like a non-profit. Maybe it's a community. These are all good things. But they're ultimately temporary. And in fact, what you'll find is if you spent your entire life devoted to your family, your kids will one day become adults. You'll have an identity crisis. This is all you've done for the last 20 years is be a parent. And then when they leave and move on, suddenly everything you've devoted, everything you had to, no longer exists and you've got to start all over. Maybe it's your career and you're devoting all of your time and all of your energy and all of your mental space to the job that you have or the responsibilities that you hold. You're going to retire at 67 years old and you've got another 20 to 30 years of life. And so my challenge to you is to devote yourself and devote your life to something that is bigger than you and bigger than the everyday. Because what you'll find is at the end of your life, you will be able to look back and you'll realize that all those things that you wanted to devote your life to ended up better off because you devoted your life to Jesus. Because what we see with these disciples is as they walk alongside Jesus, they are physically changed. Not because of reading a million books on how to, not because they read 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. They're changed because they were with him. The disciples were physically changed because they were with Jesus. And all of the things we do in our lives are fantastic. They really are. And I mean this genuinely. All of the things that we spend our time and energy on are great things. But man, if we could just catch this, if we could just spend that same amount of stress, worry, energy, anxiety, all of that time and energy, if we could just spend that with Jesus, I guarantee you all of those things in 10 years' time would look exactly how we manage them, imagine them, if not better. And the reality is for you and me today, we are becoming who we are. Helpful way to think about this is that the system you've got is perfectly tuned to get the results that you're getting. So if you don't like who you are, have a look at your system. What are you actually cultivating? Are you cultivating your time? Are you cultivating your friendships? Are you cultivating your feed? If you're not doing these things, maybe it's because you haven't intentionally looked at them. And you find yourself in a place that was temporary. You never meant to be here, but suddenly it's accidentally become permanent. Now, why is that important? Because I think there's two people in the room. Some of us today are like Levi, the tax collector. We feel ostracized. We feel separate. We feel like we've never really belonged. And we feel like we didn't love the decisions we made, but somehow we end ourselves in a place where we never wanted to be. And I got to let you know that the invitation is on the table for you today to be included. That desire in your heart to be fully known for who you are, all of the good and all of the bad, there is an offer on the table, not only from Jesus, but from us as a church, that you can be yourself here and we will love you no matter what, just like Jesus. Because Jesus looks at our lives and he understands just how broken and sinful and horrendous the inside of our hearts are. Leo Tolstoy says this thing, if the average human being could know what the average human being's thought life was like, we would be terrified. God knows what this looks like in him. And yet he chose you. He chose to reinvest in a relationship with you. And so if you are today feeling like you've never really belonged, like you've never really had a home, like you've never really been included, I need you to know that there's an offer on the table from Jesus and from us, that this is a place for you. And there has been a place made for you. But on the other side of that same conversation, there are some of us in the room today that are feeling just like the disciples. We have been deeply wronged by somebody. It might have been our parents as we were growing up. It might have been a colleague. It might have been someone who was supposed to be a responsible adult. And we have been dealing with a lack of forgiveness and a bitterness and an anger towards that person, and we don't want to let it go. In fact, we're so angry about whatever it is that's happened, it's actually consumed our whole lives. And sometimes you'll see things happen and you go, where did that come from? And you realize it's because this bitterness that's been kept in here is overflowing in places you never thought it would. Maybe for you, it was a relationship with your parents that you've never really been able to process. And suddenly you are yelling at your own children, even though you vowed you never would. It's because you haven't gone back and dealt with this bitterness and this forgiveness. And just the same for you, there is an offer on the table from Jesus to partner with you in repairing your heart and forgiving that person, to live in freedom. But here's the deal. If we're not intentional with what we're cultivating, none of this stuff will ever come to light. If we're not spending time in prayer, reading the Bible, understanding Jesus' will for our lives, if we're not spending time on that, it's going to be very difficult for us to know that that's actually what the problem is. It's going to be really difficult for us if we're not cultivating quality friendships for people to speak into our lives and say, hey, I've noticed that you are more agitated than normal. Is there stuff that you need to talk about? If we don't have healthy friendships, we can't do that. If we've got unhealthy boundaries, if we've got unhealthy digital feeds, we'll never understand what's going on in here because it's never brought to attention. And so why am I sharing all this? Because I think it's important we understand that God is a supernatural God. And I think especially in the Western society, we can try to explain away the miraculous intervention of God. But if we take a step back and we look at the whole narrative, we have got a God who somehow or another orchestrated the entirety of the universe, and the cherry on top of the entire narrative is humanity. And whether or not it was done in 6 days or 13 billion years, it doesn't really matter to me because the description does. And that is that humanity is very good. And so we have a God who looked at the entirety of blank space canvas and he said, you know what's going to be the best thing I can possibly do is to build human beings. This is supernatural. But what's more crazy to me is that we as a human race actively chose against this God, and we still do it today, each and every day. We say, no, God, I don't want you. I want my own life. I don't want to cultivate my time. I want to spend it however I want. I don't want to cultivate my friendships. I just want people to tell me I'm great. I don't want to cultivate my influences. I just want to do whatever I feel like. I don't want people telling me what I'm doing wrong in my life. I don't want to lead other people. I just want to live a comfortable and good life. Is that a bad thing? And God, instead of smiting us, chooses to re-engage in the form of Jesus. And in the form of Jesus, he bridges the gap between heaven and earth, not just so that we can have eternal life, but so that we can have a real life here and now that is devoted to more than what we could ever understand. And so the biggest spiritual mistake that you and I can make is trying to change ourselves. Because, man, you can read a lot of self-help books. I don't know. This is like the biggest section on Amazon right now. Look at all of the habits I can do. Atomic habits, this habits, these many habits. That's not going to change your life. What's going to change your life is spending time with Jesus. We've seen it here in the life of the disciples. And I got to say it. God is outside of space and time. And so he can already see who you could become. He can already see the absolute best version of yourself that is tied to a purpose and a meaning and a story that is bigger than you could imagine. And what I am realizing is I could miss out on who I could become because I don't want to consecrate my life. I don't want to cultivate my time. I don't want to cultivate my feed. I don't want to cultivate my friendships. And I could actually miss out on everything that God has for me because I actively chose to live a smaller life. And so I want to put the challenge out to you today. You are becoming who you are. But the dream and the vision and the purpose that God has for you is bigger than you can imagine. Bigger than you can understand. And so we're actually going to stand together and we're going to sing Make Room Again. And the reason we're going to do that is because it's not just words in these songs. It's prayer and it's belief that God actually can change the world that we live in through us. In fact, if we ask God to make room in our hearts for him to speak to us, to move through us, to speak through us, we will see a city and a nation change for the goodness of God. But we can't do it if we don't put ourselves in the position for God to use us.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. For more great resources and to keep yourself up to date, head to our website. Visit therocks.church.